this afternoon. It's good to see everyone back, and appreciate the prayers for Jarell and her parents and grandmother on their trip. I want to talk a few minutes tonight about the sin of complaining. I know nobody has a problem with this, but just in case, I'm just preaching to myself tonight if I'm not preaching to anybody else. So, sometimes complaining is an issue for us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 1 through 6 that Brennan read for us, we're going to use that kind of as template tonight for our lesson, because Paul addressed this with the Corinthian brethren. Among the many problems that the Corinthians seemed to have, this was among them, and Paul used some examples from the past to show some things that they needed to learn. One of the benefits of looking into the past is being able to learn from other people's mistakes. And what Paul says here is that there were those that were their fathers, their ancestors. It says they all passed through the cloud, or were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and set in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them. That rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. These things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they lusted. One of the things that was a problem with the Israelites is very well known, is that they murmured and they complained. And Paul wanted to capitalize on helping people learn from things that they probably pretty well knew. The Israelite journey out of Egypt. In chapter 9, verses 26 and 27, he reminds them that they're running a race, they're working toward a reward or a prize, and they need to be serious about that, and they need to run in a way so that they may obtain the prize. When somebody runs such to win a prize, they do that with discipline and with a goal in mind, and it's to receive something that is imperishable when it has to do with our spiritual life. And so he takes them back to their fathers and says, I don't want you to be unaware of their experience in the wilderness. All the Hebrews knew that they were physical descendants of Abraham. But to truly be God's children, they needed to be His spiritual descendants, not just a physical descendant. Paul said, for they are not all Israel who descended from Israel. That is not the children of the flesh who are children of God, but the children of the promise are regarded as descendants. That's in Romans chapter 9. And so God draws a distinction there between those who consider themselves to be physical descendants and really who God has as His chosen people. Abraham was considered a father of the faithful and is mentioned that way in Romans chapter 4 and also in Galatians chapter 3. And so Paul references that many times as Abraham being the father of the faithful. So it's really more of a precise meaning than what the Israelites sometimes looked at. They're thinking about themselves in a physical way, and God's looking at them in a spiritual way. And so that's important here as Paul draws out this illustration, because he's drawing upon something that they're already very much aware of. And many times they don't tend to focus on the negative example that their fathers might have shown. They look back and are proud of their heritage, but they don't always see the mistakes that their fathers made. So Paul emphasizes this, and in verses 1 through 4, if we go back here, he emphasizes that Israel is one as a community of God's people. They all shared a similar experience because of who they were. And the word all is used five times in these verses 1 through 4 to indicate the oneness that they had. And that experience as Israelites. They all had enormous spiritual and physical privileges under that cloud of protection that God gave them. And certainly they didn't always live in such a way to deserve that. They all passed safely over to the other side of the Red Sea. They were all immersed in the blessings and the leadership of Moses as they went over onto dry ground. And Paul also said they were all fed by the same spiritual food. So all is said multiple times here. But, you know, that's not the end of that discussion. Paul says, but with most of them, God was not well pleased. So despite the fact that God had brought them together, blessed them with this deliverance, many of them, in fact, most of them, failed spiritually. And so it's possible to have a great spiritual privilege or have great advantages and still not be saved. And that really is a tragic thing. And certainly there's a lesson in that for us as well. Sometimes we may have spiritual privileges growing up in a family that taught us to rely on God and His blessings, but that doesn't always work. It doesn't always take. And so that's a tragic thing. How could these people be so foolish and rebellious and end up in that condition? And so when you look here at verse 6, it says, "These things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted." And so this is what Paul wants them to be aware of. And if you read on, I don't have it up on the screen, but what are some of these things that he doesn't want them to do that their fathers did? Verse 7 says, "Don't become idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." So many of them followed after idolatry, and a lot of that came from the mixed marriages that they were in and the fact that they didn't drive the people out of the land as they should have. Verse 8 says, "Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and that day, in one day, 23,000 fell. Verse 9, "Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents." And so we all recognize these things as being, I guess you could say, a disqualifier. This could be evidence that the Israelites, they're going to lose their position for God if they're idolaters and they're adulterers going into these kind of sins. But when you look at 1 Corinthians 10, verse 10, it's where it gets a little more serious. It says, "Nor complain as some of them complained." Now, wait a minute. We're talking about adultery, and we're talking about idolatry. We're talking about things that are serious if we're going to categorize sin. But here he lists complaining right alongside these other things. Verse 11 said, "These things happened to them as examples and were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come." Now, you know, most Christians would usually not consider lusting after evil, bowing down to an idol, committing adultery or fornication or some of these other things. But many, many times we are heard complaining. And I had lumped myself into that category. That, you know, sometimes I complain. Many times I do. But God is telling me here that it's not something that He really looked upon favorably, that the Israelites did. And Paul is telling the Corinthians that this is what they did, and you don't need to do that. So why is it that complaining is something that is distasteful to God? In the book of James, which really has more to say about the tongue, I guess you could also throw Proverbs into that too, but James in the New Testament surely is a place where we look to that talks to us about how we use our tongue and the danger that the tongue is for us. In James chapter 3, verse 6, the tongue is called a world of iniquity, and it certainly is a dangerous thing, that so many sins can be committed by our tongues, and we see that in the world every day. I'm probably not alone in thinking that sometimes we would wish that politicians would not say things that they say, that they would learn how to control their tongue, and many things that escalate into problems are because people don't know the right thing to say, or they simply are saying things that ought not to be said, and they say whatever it is that comes to their mind. And if somebody describes you in such a way that say, well, you don't ever have to wonder about what Randy's thinking, you know, is that a good thing? Well, no, that's not meant as a compliment. If somebody says about you, well, you don't ever have to worry about what he says or what he thinks or she thinks, what that means is that they always have loose lips, and that whatever it is that they're thinking, that it's just going to pop out of their mouth and they're going to say it. And so the book of James describes the tongue as something that can set a forest on fire. It's like a ship that has a rudder, and the rudder is going to tell it which way to go, and the tongue is that way for our body, and it has a great deal of power. And so there are many, many sins that are committed with the tongue, such as lying, speaking blasphemies, using profanity, gossip, and we understand that. But rarely do people really think about complaining as a sin. But we have a culture today that kind of revels in criticism. We often talk about being blessed with the freedom of speech. And just because you have freedom of speech doesn't mean that you have to use it all the time. That doesn't mean that you have to keep saying things, and that's something that people need to learn. But people think very little about speaking up and voicing their concerns about things or being critical or complaining about many things. In fact, just this last week, I was at a place where I needed to take care of an issue, and the person that was in front of me obviously wanted to complain long and loudly, you know, for everybody to hear. And I don't know what all was going on with his situation, but it was clear that there wasn't anything that this person could do for them except to stand there and listen to them go on and on and on and complain. And certainly that's not an isolated thing. People complain about the pictures on their TV. They complain about prices they pay. They complain about whether or not officials made the right call. We have lots of careers that are based on criticism. You know, you could be a restaurant critic or movie critic or whatever. And so our society, what I'm saying is our society really abounds with criticism. And maybe for that reason, you know, sometimes we have a difficult time viewing complaining and criticism as a sin. But what Paul said about the Israelites, that when they complained, they were ultimately destroyed by the destroyer. And that's not a good reference. That's not a good a statement about these people. Now, the Israelites, they had been delivered from, you could call Pharaoh a destroyer, who destroyed the lives of the firstborn in Egypt. And you know, he's certainly influenced by Satan. And now they are being told that they are complainers, and that God is not pleased with this. And you compare these two different sins, and I know it, and we're going to do another lesson on that next week. I was actually going to do that tonight. I'm moving to next week or the week after to talk about, are some sins worse than others? But you look at what Pharaoh did to the people of Israel, and that seems pretty serious. But here is God saying that the people of Israel are being destroyed by the destroyer because of their complaining. So what does that teach us? It just teaches us that that there's all kinds of things that we don't take so seriously that we need to take seriously. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8, said, or verse 9 says, be hostile to one another without grumbling or without murmuring. James chapter 5, verse 9 says, do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. And the word here for grumble in James chapter 5, it's also translated murmur, or it's also translated voice a grudge. And the statement that the judge is standing at the door is an interesting one, because it really denotes that what you're saying, what's coming out of your mouth, God's standing right there and listening to it. That the judge, the one who is judging you, is right there hearing everything that you say. Philippians chapter 2, verse 14, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. And when Paul says, do all things without complaining and disputing, what things is he talking about? Well, he said all. You know, so I don't really have to spend a lot of time talking about what things it is, because he said all, and that's all inclusive. So there's really not wiggle room in that to justify consistent complaining. A Christian who refrains from complaining is described as blameless and harmless. So if you turn that around, what does it say about a Christian who is complaining? If the one who is not complaining or refrains from it is blameless and harmless, the one who is full of complaints is being harmful and to be blamed. And so, you know, refusing to complain is a mark of distinction from the world. In Jude 1:16, it says, there are grumblers, complainers, walking according to their own lusts, and they mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage. What Jude was referring to is the false teachers and heretics of that day, and one thing that they had said about them is that their lives were characterized by grumbling and murmuring and complaining, and it was a characteristic of those who are wicked, not a characteristic of those who are righteous. So, why is it that we can see complaining is a sin? Well, you know, but most people don't want to be around somebody who complains. Most people don't want to be around someone who is constantly negative. And let's just look at a few examples of why this is an issue. First of all, there are some things for which an action needs to be taken. And I'll call it a legitimate complaint. Or you may want to put a different term with it. But an example of this is in Acts chapter 6 and verse 1. When there was an issue that needed to be taken care of in the Jerusalem church. It said, now in those days when the number of disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. Now the word here that's translated complaint is one that would make this appear that this was something that was legitimate. And I think we can see that it is legitimate because it was something that was taken care of. That the apostles said, you know, we are going to take care of this issue, and there is no condemnation of the ones who brought this complaint up. What they did is they took steps to correct the injustice and make sure that it never happened again. So I do want to make a distinction that there are times when issues need to be brought to other people's attention, and that would not be considered the type of sinful complaining and murmuring that we see, you know, Paul condemning in the Corinthians. Because this was clearly something that was being neglected and it needed to be taken care of, and they wanted to make sure that it didn't happen again. So that kind of injustice needed to be corrected. So it's not a sin to point out errors. It's not a sin to point out faults as so to bring about change or to bring about repentance. But I think, you know, common sense will help us in that area. We know that a lot of our complaints don't fit into that category. A lot of complaining is displaying a lack of forbearance and a lack of love. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2 talks about having forbearance one for another. So what is our first response when somebody displeases us? Often our first response is to complain to somebody else about that person. And we assign motives or we impugn motives and make judgments, you know, without even, you know, considering the fact that God tells us to forbear with one another. You know, I caught myself doing that just the other day. I won't go into the details because then I would be violating what I'm talking about. But what I realized is that I needed to do a little bit more research and talking to somebody before I decided whether or not I knew what their motive was and what they did. I was making an assumption, and you know, we don't always know that we're right on those things. And when we complain to others, it does display a lack of love and forbearance. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also loved us and given Himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. And, of course, we did a lesson recently on 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that talks about what love is and that love suffers long. Love is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not rejoice in evil, but rejoices in truth. And so all those things really go hand in hand when we talk about, you know, forbearance and love, which would lead to a lack of complaining. Also, complaining about circumstances really impugns the goodness of God and displays ingratitude. Recently, I knew of a situation where somebody wanted to do some things, and it has nothing to do with the congregation here. It actually had to do with some things going on at camp. But one of the counselors wanted to do some things for all the other counselors and wanted to bake some things for each cabin. And so she advertised to everybody what she was going to do for each cabin. It was something she was doing out of the goodness of her heart, and at no cost to anybody else. And she described, I'm going to give you this, this, and this for your cabin. And one of the other counselors posted on Facebook, you know, what are the other choices? You know, so, and here's, it'd be like Penny bringing food over to my house and she's brought me chicken cacciatore. So, you know, do you have anything Italian? That would be very rude, wouldn't it? If somebody is giving you something as a gift and you ask for something else. And so that's just an example here of something we can see that's clearly ungrateful and not appropriate. And so if we turn that around and think about that in a spiritual way, when we complain about our circumstances, and most of us when we compare ourselves to much of the world, that we are very fortunate, even if we're not, you know, in the upper echelon of society today. Complaining about our circumstances, what does that say about our attitude toward God? It displays ingratitude and shows that we don't have the proper the proper perspective. And it just goes to showing that we have a negative perspective on everything. And that example that I cited is a problem with the person that said that whatever it is that they receive, they're always looking for something else. And so that if that describes us, you know, that's clearly an ungrateful heart. So we don't want a negative perspective, or shouldn't have a negative perspective of everything, especially when it comes to our attitude toward what God has given us. Some people would never complain about another person, but they constantly complain about their circumstances of their life. And, you know, for example, you may meet some people that meet every blessing or comment on a blessing with a yeah, but. You know, isn't the weather nice today? Yeah, but I hear it's going to rain tomorrow. Or, you know, it's cold where I live. I hear you got a raise. Yeah, but it's still not enough, you know, for me to pay my bills. I see you're doing better. Well, yeah, I still can't sleep at night. My back hurts. My insurance won't pay for all my bills. And so we may have made statements like that before. Certainly we've heard them from time to time when somebody says, you know, you're doing better, and you go, yeah, but, you know, don't think I'm doing so great, because I want to tell you why I'm not. And so we need to take notice about how we react to blessings next time it's pointed out to us that you know, something good has happened or something positive has happened, and then we take the negative view of that. The classic illustration that I read a long, long time ago is the farmer who, somebody saw his great crop of apples, and somebody commented on how great all the apples looked, and he says, well, yeah, but I don't have any rotten ones to feed the pigs. And so, you know, that's a horrible thing to have that kind of attitude. You know, James chapter 5, verses 13 and 14 gives us some options here about how we ought to react. It says, is any one of you in any trouble? He should pray. Is anyone happy? Let him sing songs of praise. Is any one of you sick? He should call the elders of the church to pray over him and anoint him with oil in the name of the Lord. So we have options here to be happy and to sing songs of praise and to take care of those kind of things in a godly way when we do have trouble. Sometimes people complain and have a negative spirit, and it displays a lack of contentment in our lives. Philippians chapter 4, verse 11 through 13 is remarkable in that Paul wrote these things from prison about contentment. And it's always good to keep that in mind when you read what Paul said, what his current circumstances were. But he said, not that I speak in regard to need, for I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And what you note about Paul when he says this is that he learned to be content. So maybe at some point he wasn't. But he said that I've learned in whatever state I'm in, no matter what condition I'm in, whether I'm free or in prison or being persecuted, he's learned contentment. And he encourages them to concentrate on those things and to meditate on the blessings of God. And he points out that, you know, there may be different things going on. You may be hungry, you may be full, you may be abounding, or you may be suffering need, but in all those cases you can learn contentment. In Hebrews chapter 13, verses 5 and 6, the Hebrew writer says, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Finally, complaining also displays selfishness. That's not really a surprise, because just about all sin is rooted in selfishness. It's why people steal, it's why people lie, it's why people cheat, it's why they're negligent in their duties to God, or even refusing to become Christians in the first place. A lot of those things have a root in selfishness or pride, as we mentioned this morning. But certainly, complaining has a root in selfishness. And it's because we think about ourselves constantly. Have you ever seen a happy complainer? It doesn't make sense, does it? And Paul's telling us to be happy, but you can't have those things together. Or a rejoiceful murmurer. Those things don't go together either. Philippians chapter 2, verse 4, that each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Philippians 4, verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. It's hard to be selfish. It's hard to be joyful when you have a mindset of complaining and murmuring. You just can't get there with that kind of attitude. Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 26, said, nevertheless, you would not go up, but you rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You complained in your tents and said, because the Lord hates us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. This is the kind of attitude that Paul was referencing in 1 Corinthians. Those that had come out of the land of slavery, who had been delivered from their persecutors and tormentors. And when things didn't go the way that they wanted them to, temporarily, they murmured and they complained. That's what Paul's saying. He said, you're just like your fathers who did these things, and you ought not to be doing that. So what he's saying is you have been found to be just like your ancestors. You should be seeing all the good that the Lord's done for you, and you're just sitting around in your tent complaining instead of rising up and following God where He leads. God doesn't hate you, but you're saying that He does. Now, this is really the opposite of the attitude that they should have. So how would they turn that around? How would they show others that God loved them? Well, they could start with not complaining. And attitudes are so crucial and they're so foundational. We have to give attention to that. These outward actions and things that are said, we have to inventory those things and try to get them out of our lives. Sometimes we rationalize that we're special and that we're somehow exempt from this command, as though God has never seen this before, and that we're the ones that are the exception to the rule. But this has been happening forever. It's been happening with the Israelites, and it still happens today. It's happening with the Corinthians. So bottom line is, we don't need to overlook the goodness of God. We need to be thankful. We need to be obedient. And we need to try to remove that root of bitterness from our lives that exhibits itself into the kind of unproductive complaining that is being condemned here. So, if you get something out of that, that's great. It's something that I needed, so you just chalk it up to this is the sermon for Randy tonight. If it's something that can help you, I hope that it will take root and help all of us. If in any way tonight you're subject to the invitation, we can help in any way, be obedient to God. I invite you to come while we stand and sing.